Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with 4 Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. When we get together with our families for a meal, there's a general understanding, if we're all to get along and not have heartburn while we eat, we need to avoid 2 subjects, religion and politics. The subject of whether the planet is warming and whether human activity plays a role in that warming is something that can spark heated discussion at some of my family gatherings. I mean, many of my family and friends are from West Virginia, and they've been deeply impacted by the boom and bust of the coal industry. Climate isn't just an abstract thing for them, and the discussion can get emotional and a little heated. In the interest of peace, we usually change the subject. But talking about climate is important and isn't just something that should be left for the politicians to sort out. Rather, it's something that needs careful discussion at a basic level among families, at schools, and churches. But how to do it? Because just about any serious conversation about the warming of the planet, at least here in America, manages to touch the third rail of religion and politics.
It's really amazing the way the science has been politicized into these different tribes, to where if I belong to this group or that group, then I can't agree with scientific results. My name is Catherine Hayhoe. I am a climate scientist, and I specifically study what climate change means to us in the places where we live.
One important detail Dr. Hayhoe left out of her self-description is that she's a lifelong evangelical Christian. In 2014, Time magazine named her one of the 100 most influential people. Why? Because she tackles the hot-button topic of climate change head on. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX, this is Us and Them, the podcast where we tell stories about America's culture divides. I'm Trey Kay. Dr. Catherine Hayhoe and her preacher husband, Andrew Farley, live with their son in Lubbock, Texas. She's a professor at Texas Tech University, where she's the director of their Climate Science Center. But she didn't grow up in the United States.
Growing up in Canada, you know, we learned that the sky is blue, the grass is green, and climate is changing due to human activity. I grew up in a home where not only science, but faith were equally valued. My dad is a science teacher and an education researcher, and also very involved with our local church. And in fact, we spent a number of years down in South America where my parents served as missionaries with the local church there as well. I grew up with the perspective that I did not realize was so unusual until I was much older, that faith and science are just two sides of the same coin. And if we believe that God created this amazing universe that we lived in, then what is science other than just trying to figure out what God was thinking when he put the whole thing together in the first place?
When I told some of my friends, many of them blue state liberals from the Northeast, that I was going to be interviewing a respected climate scientist, who also happens to be an evangelical Christian, I recall the curious look on their faces, kind of like dogs tilting their heads when they hear you make a baffling sound that they don't understand. A climate scientist who is an evangelical Christian? I thought those two things didn't go together. But Catherine Hayhoe says that Americans' perception that evangelical Christianity and science are mutually exclusive isn't a reality that she grew up with.
growing up with a dad who's a science teacher, you're pretty much indoctrinated from an early age that science is the coolest and the best thing that you could possibly ever study. So when I was going to university, it wasn't really a question of what to study. It was just a question of which scientific field to study. And I opted for physics and astronomy, or astrophysics, because I love the idea that using nothing more than our brains and the instruments that we can build here on this tiny planet orbiting an average star, we can study and we can learn about what is happening in the furthest reaches of the universe. I think that is just absolutely amazing.
When Heho was finishing her undergrad degree, she thought her next move would be to head to grad school for an advanced degree in galactic astronomy. But to finish her bachelor's, she needed to fulfill one more requirement and saw that a course on climate science would fit the bill. And what she learned in that course surprised her.
Of course, everybody's concerned about air pollution and water pollution and deforestation and biodiversity loss and climate change. And yes, you know, we really should fix these problems. But until I took that class, I did not realize that climate change is what the U.S. military now calls a threat multiplier. The reason why we care about a changing climate is because it takes all of these other issues and it exacerbates or it multiplies them to the extent where we will not be able to fix these issues if we leave climate change out of the picture. And by these issues, I do not only mean environmental issues. I personally care about climate change because it exacerbates humanitarian issues like poverty, hunger, lack of access to clean water, even political instability that leads to refugee crises. We are not going to be able to fix the most pressing issues that plague our world today if we leave climate change out of the picture.
After this course, Heho made climate study her life's work. She immersed herself in the data and got a better understanding of just how humans contribute to the warming of the planet. In the early part of her career, she believed that if scientists would just provide the public with correct information, people would see the urgency and take action.
What I have learned since then, in the many years and even decades that followed, is facts are not enough. We have known enough to act on climate since scientists formally warned a U.S. president of the dangers of climate change over 50 years ago. That president was Lyndon B. Johnson. We have had the facts we need for decades, yet today we are further from action than we were, say, 15 or 20 years ago. It isn't more scientific facts that are going to tip the balance. It is understanding why this issue matters to us personally.
When did you first realize that your discipline in science might be at odds with the belief of the people who were of your faith? When did that happen?
Until I moved to the U.S. for graduate school, I had never met somebody who didn't drink. I had never met somebody who thought the Earth was 6,000 years old. And I had never met anyone who thought that climate change wasn't real. In fact, I didn't even really know these people existed except in the fringes of the internet. So it was a surprise to me to learn that this was, and today has become even more, almost an article of faith on people's statement of belief. There is nothing that is inherently in conflict with Christian theology. The idea that humans are responsible for this planet is laid out in Genesis 1. We're not usurping God's authority. We're actually given this planet to be stewards or caretakers or have dominion over this planet. And then you go all the way through the Bible. It talks about God's love and care and appreciation for and joy in creation, which is nature. And then all through the New Testament, it talks about loving and caring for people. And again, the reason why I care about a changing climate most is because it affects real people today, especially the poor and the most vulnerable among us. And then you get to the book of Revelation, where it says God will destroy those who destroy the earth. So there's no inherent theological conflict between what Christians believe and between what scientists are saying is happening to the planet as a result of our energy choices.
Okay, so Heho says there's nothing in the theology that should separate Christians from scientists. But it doesn't play out that way in real life. A 2015 Pew Research study suggests that only a quarter of white evangelicals believe the Earth's warming is due to human activity. About a third say it's due to natural weather patterns. And another third believe that there isn't evidence that climate change is occurring at all. So remember what I said earlier, that conversations about climate change touch the third rail of religion and politics? It might be because people's opinions on the topic are not informed by the Bible or what their preacher says on Sunday, but what they hear from political opinion makers, like Rush Limbaugh.
My humble opinion, folks, if you believe in God, then intellectually you cannot believe in man-made global warming.
Or politicians like Oklahoma Senator James Inhofe.
My point is, God's still up there. And this is the arrogance of people to think that we, human beings, would be able to change what he is doing in the climate is, to me, outrageous.
Again, Catherine Hayhoe.
It's really amazing the way the science has been politicized into these different tribes, to where if I belong to this group or that group, then I can't agree with scientific results. In the United States, over the past 30 years or so, political ideology has increasingly become the number one predictor of what tribe or what group we associate with. It's gotten to the point today where the number one predictor of who you will marry if you're not already married is no longer, you know, how attractive they are, how educated they are, whether they come from, you know, similar socioeconomic background or even their race. The number one predictor of who people will marry in the U.S. now is how close they are to you on the political spectrum. The Pew Political Polarization Survey has been tracking the landscape in the United States since 1994, and it shows that back in 1994, people were pretty moderate. Most people were kind of in the middle of the political spectrum. Today, the vast majority of people are out at the edges, not just on one side, on both sides.
Right.
When we survey people about whether they agree with the science on climate change and whether they think climate change is a serious concern, we see that white evangelicals and white Catholics are least likely to agree with the science and least likely to be concerned about a changing climate.
Hayhoe singling out white Catholics for their lack of concern about climate change is a detail that stuck out to me because there is another corollary. As it happens, Hispanic Catholics are one of the demographics most concerned about climate in the United States. And they really resonate with Pope Francis's 2015 encyclical about the seriousness of addressing how humans impact the planet. But white Catholics don't feel the same.
The encyclical actually decreased people's trust in the Pope if they didn't already agree with him on climate change. As they would say here in Texas, there's a lot of, oh, bless his heart going on, which sort of means, you know, you're metaphorically patting the person on the head saying, well, he means well, but he doesn't know what he's talking about. So when we dig deeper into the data, we see that it isn't what people believe, and it certainly isn't where they sit on a Sunday for an hour, that is actually predicting their opinion. When you actually look at what's causing people's opinion, it is not being evangelical and it is not being Catholic that is causing people to reject the climate science. It is the affiliation of specifically white evangelicals and white Catholics with conservative politics because of issues on abortion and issues related to race that date back decades in the U.S.
So studies show that America's white Catholics and white evangelicals disproportionately reject the science of climate change. Hayhoe says their religious brethren from other parts of the world see things differently.
When I went to the Paris Climate Talks a couple of years ago, I met with the head of the World Evangelical Alliance there, who represents over 600 million evangelicals around the whole world. He was there as an official delegate for his country, the Philippines. He took climate change so seriously that in addition to serving as Secretary General for the World Evangelical Alliance, he also volunteered as a representative for his country to represent the faith community in the international negotiations on climate.
So as I understand it, you're saying that really what is underlying this is really kind of how people are acculturated politically. And if that's the case, how do we unhook that? How do we uncouple that? How do we unlink that?
So when I talk to people, rather than beginning the conversation as we so often do with someone or with people who we think disagree with us, so often we begin the conversation from a place of what divides us. We begin by defining where we differ. I don't do that. Instead, I begin a conversation from a place of where we agree. And if I can't find something that we agree on, then I don't think that's a conversation worth having. But the reality is that, first of all, we're all human. We all live on this planet.
Right.
You know, long-term plans to go to Mars are not exactly viable yet. This is the only planet right. we have. Most of us like to make sure that we have clean air to breathe and clean water to drink and enough food to eat. Most of us would like a stable economy where we can get a job, our families can have jobs, we can raise our families in a safe place. So there's a lot of things that we already do share just being a human on this planet. And we can start by talking about those. As people of faith, we share even more. We share a conviction that we have a responsibility to care for this planet that we have been given as a gift from God. And this is a concept that is not only Christian. Every major world religion has aspects of this in their tradition. And then as Christians, we also believe that we are to love others as we in turn have been loved by Christ. And so with that, that makes the connection not just between the world around us and our responsibility to it, but our responsibility to all of our brothers and sisters who share that planet. And so when I talk to people, whether it's water managers, starting with a shared concern for water here in Texas, which is a very dry location, whether it's farmers who are concerned about the future of their land, whether it's people of faith who want to live out what they believe in their day-to-day lives, whether it's parents who care about the future of their children, whatever it is that we share, that's where I start the conversation. All we have to do is connect the dots and help people understand that caring about a changing climate is a true and genuine expression of exactly who they already are.
Climate scientist Catherine Hayhoe. After a short break, we'll discuss how difficult it can be to appreciate the true and genuine expressions of the people we encounter on social media. And we'll hear what she calls the media's false balance of climate change coverage.
There aren't two sides to gravity, and there aren't two sides to whether the planet is warming. It's not a matter of belief or opinion. If we look at our own backyards when trees are blooming, how sea level is rising, how species are moving poleward, there's over 26,500 independent lines of evidence showing us that the planet is warming.
I'm Trey Kay, and this is Us and Them, which is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation.
In difficult times, music gives us peace, brings us together, and helps heal us. It calms our nerves and brightens our days. That's why we're bringing you classic episodes of Mountain Stage on air and in our podcast. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find something that's familiar or brand new and feel the power of live music on our website, mountainstage.org.
Now back to my conversation with climate scientist Catherine Hayhoe. I appreciate you talking about how it is that we can realize that the other person has everything that they need to come to some consensus or agreement on this, because it seems as though to get to that place where we can find that meeting, I've checked out your Facebook page, and if you were ever to check out my Facebook page, when there's a conversation about climate science, things get really hostile. And it seems as though, as you've said before, the political rhetoric is really heightened. And I'm wondering how we can get beyond this kind of angry, vitriolic conversation that seems to often occur over the subject of climate change.
Often, the loudest voices online will be dismissives. And I have to say, I don't have a lot of productive conversations online with somebody who starts off by disagreeing with me. I have had some, because what I do is this. If somebody comes at me on Twitter or on Facebook, as long as they are not incredibly offensive the first time, you know, calling me the devil or Satan's handmaiden or something like that. As long as they're not incredibly offensive.
People have called you that?
I get that stuff every week, often every day, sometimes, you know, hundreds of times a day. When people approach me, particularly online, with a you know, but what about this type of thing, or I bet you haven't thought of that type of thing, and honestly, there is no new objection under the sun. I think I've heard them pretty much all at this point. I will respond once, and I'll respond very politely and positively and give them a, you know, a quick answer and a resource that they can go to. If it escalates, if the next response is more hostile than the one before, or if they didn't bother to have the courtesy to look at the resource, if they just want to play the whack-a-mole game, which is just, you know, popping up objections like moles, and as soon as you whack one, they pop another one up, that's a sign that they're dismissive. And if that's the case, I will disengage. But rarely, once in a while, maybe once in 100 times, the conversation does not escalate. It just kind of proceeds, or maybe even, you know, assumes a more positive tone. And in that case, we can dialogue back and forth where I give them resources, showing them that, hey, my question to them often is, what type of person are you? If it's on social media, I'll look at their profile, see if they're a Christian or a conservative or a libertarian or a member of the military. And I'll give them resources that come from people who they trust. That way we can have a positive conversation. But I have to say that it is really difficult to have a positive conversation online. And honestly, I would say, you know, probably only 1% to 2% of the conversations I have with people online on Twitter or Facebook end up going in a positive direction when they have initially approached me in a negative way.
Right. I find that so much with my Facebook page and those conversations that there are things that people, I just don't think that they would say to me in person. But you made me think of something. I wondered, how often do scientists and lay people come together and talk? And whether some of the problem over climate science might be that there aren't many direct conversations, but instead that there are these conversations that happened that are mediated by the media. And if this disconnect, or the fact that we do not have these conversations more often, if that is something that makes it more difficult for us to come together on an important topic like climate change.
Some of my colleagues in the Climate Communication Center at George Mason have done some work looking at what single piece of information changes the most minds on climate. And what they found was very fascinating. They found that the single piece of information that changes the most minds, if you only have 30 seconds in an elevator, is the statement, over 97% of scientists agree. It turns out that most people think that scientists themselves are 50-50 on this issue. Why do we think that? We think that because every time we turn on the TV, what do we see? We see two talking heads yelling at each other. Or we read an article in the news and it displays what we call false balance. It says, well, you know, if we have one person saying this, we need to find somebody else saying that. But never mind that the other person isn't even a scientist. We just need to show, you know, both sides of this thing. The reality is there aren't two sides to gravity. And there aren't two sides to whether the planet is warming. It's not a matter of belief or opinion. It's looking at the data and the facts. And when we look around the whole planet, it isn't only our thermometers, it isn't only our satellites, it isn't only our ocean buoys that are telling us it's warming. If we look at our own backyards when trees are blooming, how sea level is rising, how species are moving poleward, there's over 26,500 independent lines of evidence showing us that the planet is warming. So how can we have conversations like this? Well, to be perfectly honest, I do think that the media is responsible for portraying the sense of false balance. Why would people think it's 50-50 unless they keep seeing 50-50 on the screen? Conflict makes for great media, but conflict doesn't make for constructive conversations.
Is the problem just a balance problem? I mean, I keep thinking of radio talk show hosts like Rush Limbaugh, who are vehement critics of anything that suggests that humans impact the Earth's climate. How do you think that his commentary influences the conversation on climate change?
How did climate change become such a politically polarized issue? It happened because the main objection people have is not to the actual science. I mean, the science we use in our climate models is the same science we use in our stoves and our fridges and our airplanes, and most people don't have a political problem with those. The Right. science of climate change became politicized when people recognized that climate change required collective action. And the most straightforward way to achieve collective action is often through government legislation. And there are many people in the United States who would rather cut off their arm than allow the government any more power or control over the economy or over their personal lives and choices than it already has. But it sounds a lot more palatable to say, oh, those scientists are just in it for the money, or they're just making it all up, or I have a scientist over here who says it isn't true, or God would never let that happen. It's a lot more palatable Right. to have a sciencey or religiously sounding objection to climate change than to come flat out and say, you know what? It's very probably true, but I don't want to fix it. We are looking at a revolution right now that is as big as the revolution from horse-drawn carriages to automobiles. We are looking at a revolution in the energy sector from coal, gas, and oil, which is how we have been getting our energy for hundreds of years, to a new clean energy economy where we are getting our energy from the sun, the wind, the tides, and even nuclear energy in the future in ways that are clean, in ways that do not pollute the air or pollute the water, and in the case of renewables, in ways that will never run out on us. We are looking at a revolution that is happening not only here in the U.S., but China leads the world in the most wind and solar energy. The cheapest solar prices in the world are in India. Pay-as-you-go solar energy is revolutionizing sub-Saharan Africa, where hundreds of millions of people live without any electricity of any kind. The world is changing very quickly, but those who currently have the money, especially here in the United States, and those who currently give that money to the politicians are the ones who get the money from the old way of doing things. And so they have a significant financial as well as a significant ideological motivation for trying to maintain the status quo as long as possible because their bottom dollar continues to grow. So make no mistake, this is not a neutral playing field. There is an active disinformation campaign to feed us false information. There are people who are deliberately hired and paid to muddy the waters on climate change and to make us believe that there is no agreement among the scientists or the climate isn't changing or humans aren't responsible. Whereas in reality, it's real. It's us. The impacts are serious, but we can fix it if we act now.
We do trust scientists on a lot of things, treating illness, food safety, creating technology that heats our homes, runs our phones, and gets us from place to place. But I get it. A lot of climate science is abstract. That all this talk about tree rings and ice cores, and that last year was one of the hottest on record. These are measures that we just have to take their word on. And that's not always a comfortable feeling. That lack of trust, maybe because we're not sure we share the same values. We rarely hear about the scientist speaking and that he or she has a religious underpinning in his or her life. And I feel like this gives the public the impression that scientists are only informed by science and not by faith. Do you think that that's problematic?
When I first wrote my book with my husband on a Christian perspective on climate change, I was concerned that I was even potentially flushing my career down the toilet because of the perception often in the media and in the public sphere that science and faith are in conflict. After I started, you know, telling people that I was a Christian and that's why I cared about a changing climate, so many of my colleagues have come up to me and shared that they too are Christian, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, or even I've had conversations with colleagues who say, well, you know, I don't share your faith, but I think what you're doing is fantastic. And you've encouraged me to actually bring more of my own values into the conversations that I have. My colleagues come from all different faith traditions as well as none. I have great colleagues who are Protestant and Catholic and Hindu and Jain and Buddhist and Muslim and Jewish and humanist and atheist. And in science, we all recognize that it doesn't matter. We all do the same science. So our conversations around the water cooler, so to speak, are, you know, or the coffee table at conferences, our conversations are always about science because we love science. We do science because we love it. We're excited about it. We always have fascinating stuff we want to talk about with science. And it doesn't really matter who we are, where we come from, what country, what political ideology, what religion. We share that common bond of this appreciation and awe and curiosity for understanding the world around us. One of my dreams that I would like to do when I get enough time and I get someone or other to help me is I would love to make a website that simply says, hey, we're scientists, we study climate, and we're Christians too. Let me tell you what I do, what I believe about what I do, and where I go to church. Because so often we feel like we're the only one. And it absolutely breaks my heart when I get a message or an email from somebody saying, I'm a Christian and I haven't had the courage to tell anybody about it because I thought I was the only one. But because of you, I've started to share with people that I'm a Christian, and I've discovered there's a lot of other people too who are. So it really is a myth that scientists aren't spiritual people. And my colleague Elaine Eklund at Rice University is a sociologist who studies science and religion. And what she has found, studying scientists at top research universities around the U.S., she has found that over 70% of scientists, research scientists in the U.S., would characterize themselves as spiritual people, as people who believe there is more to this world and more to this planet than what Stephen Hawking thought, that it isn't just the physical, there is a spiritual component to what we do. And that is a message I think that more people need to hear.
So, Catherine, I could use a final piece of advice from you. Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay. So let's say I want to try to have a conversation with people on different sides of the climate change question. One from an evangelical Christian perspective who isn't sure that they believe all this climate science stuff. And a scientist who doesn't have a clue about the values of people of faith, but deeply believes that the planet is warming and that it's a problem and that human activity is the cause. What do I do to help them have a conversation so that both people are heard and yet they leave feeling like they've learned something from the other person? How do I do that?
Conversations will go best when we are able to identify fundamental values that we share. So if you were going to pair somebody who is a Christian who wasn't too sure about this whole climate science thing with a scientist who studies climate change, I would encourage you to find a scientist, and there's actually quite a few of us around, surprisingly, who is a Christian. When we find out that somebody who shares our core beliefs or our core values or part of our core identity is somebody who completely agrees with the science, and they're able to explain from that perspective how and why they do. And from those values, which we agree on, we can then connect them to why we would care about a changing climate. And then step three, and possibly the most important step, always, always discuss viable, positive, actionable solutions that are consistent with and compatible with our values. Talking solutions that grow the economy, that increase national security, that increase energy independence, that invest in local jobs, that make us more competitive related to China rather than less competitive. Talking about these solutions can really change the game.
Catherine, I see you as incredibly exuberant and incredibly positive, and I think of you as like, you know, not only a glass half full, but you know, there's more water coming. And I feel like it's something that you're constantly having to lean into. And I guess my question to you is there a better place for people who would be of the evangelical fold to get information that speaks to their values, but that isn't hostile to climate science?
That's a great question. You are absolutely right. People often ask me, well, what gives you hope? How can you remain hopeful? And my answer to that is, first of all, the science does not give me hope. every time we look at our world, and I participate in the U.S. National Climate Assessment, which is a periodic assessment of the state of the planet and what we're doing to it, every time we look at our world, we see that changes are happening further and faster than we thought. Rather than overemphasizing or exaggerating the impacts we're having on our planet, it's been shown that we scientists systematically tend to underestimate those impacts because we're actually quite conservative. We don't like to be, you know, crying wolf. We don't like to be alarming. So the science doesn't give me hope, and neither does the public dialogue. But if we're able to actually sit down, especially if we can do so eye to eye, looking each other in the face, and have a conversation about what are our fears, what are our concerns, what are our anxieties, what are our worries, we can often find that we have a lot more in common than what we think. And we can even often come to agreement on solutions in ways that we never would have imagined.
Well, I'm just really grateful that you're willing to take the time to speak with me today. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you.
That's climate scientist and evangelical Christian Catherine Hayhoe. What do you think? If you're someone who identifies as secular, is there something that you heard from Dr. Hayhoe that changes how you generally feel about evangelicals and climate change? And if you're someone from the evangelical fold and are skeptical about all this climate science stuff, is there anything that you heard today that makes you think about this subject differently? Post your thoughts on our Facebook or Twitter page, or write to me, trey@usandthempodcast.com. You've been listening to Us and Them. For this episode, our team is me, Trey Kay, Loretta Williams, Whitney Henry Lester, and Mitch Handley. Special thanks to Laura James at Atmos Research and Counseling and Charles Luck at KTTZ in Lubbock, Texas. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Additional music from Blue Dot Sessions. Mark Lerner designed our logo. The wonderful people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the West Virginia Humanities Council, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with the assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
From PRX.